Comic David Cross has his first CD recorded live on his stand-up comedy tour last spring and summer. I can't really say the title on the radio, so let's just call it Shut Up, You Expletive Baby. Cross is best known as the co-founder and co-star with Bob Odenkirk of the former HBO sketch comedy series Mr. Show. The first and second seasons are collected on DVD. Newsweek called Cross and Odenkirk the goofball gurus of the alternative comedy movement. On the other hand, an article in the Washington Post described the two as sharing an acidic intellectual approach to humor. Cross started doing stand-up in 1982. He's appeared in several films and TV series, including Ghost World, Men in Black, Waiting for Guffman, Just Shoot Me, and The Drew Carey Show. Before we meet him, here's an excerpt of his new CD, in which he's talking about growing up Jewish in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia.
All the parents see you as is Jew. I'm a Jewish kid. I'm like a f***ing alien to them, you know. I'm a freak, and I'm in their living room, you know, and f***ing Dunwoody. What's happening? So, like, if I slept over a friend's house, and I'd always have to deal with these questions in the morning, like, you know, mom coming and going, David, I'm so sorry to have to ask you this. I'm so sorry. I'm fixing to make breakfast for everybody, and I certainly won't include you. And I don't know. I'm just having some questions I was hoping you could answer. Do y'all's people eat oatmeal? You know, what? Yeah. Is there something in the Torah that says we shouldn't eat oatmeal? What are you talking about? Why wouldn't we eat oatmeal? What? I don't know much about y'all's peoples. That's all. I just don't know. I know y'all hate Jesus. That much I do know. And I know y'all have 7 Jew bankers that control the world's money supply, right? In a bunker somewhere about a mile into the Earth's core. Is that right? Yeah. And y'all do, like, dances in the woods. Y'all wear cloaks and do secret services and burn potions and whatnots. And y'all have horns. Right? That's all I know about y'all's people. Yeah.
David Cross does a lot of religious, political, and sexual humor. Now that he's pretty well known, he feels like he's often preaching to the converted. But sometimes he has a date where the audience is unprepared for what they're about to hear. And he doesn't mind.
Well, I did one show fairly recently. And I got picked up by 2 of the students, and they were driving me to the college or the university, and I said, so tell me a little bit about the school. And they go, well, you know, it was founded in 18 whatever, and it's a Jesuit school. And I was like, what? Yeah, it's a Jesuit school. And then I said, well, have you guys seen my act? No, but, you know, we saw you did Just Shoot Me, and you were in Men in Black. That was pretty funny. And so then I was like, all right, fine. And I went up there and had 300 walkouts. And,
wow. That's more than are in many audiences.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Now, you describe yourself as an atheist, Jewish-born. Mm-hmm. And as you describe in the CD, once you're born Jewish, you kind of stay Jewish even if you are an atheist, because that's the rules of the game.
Right. Yes.
So how did you become an atheist?
I was about 10 years old. I know I just moved back to Georgia, and I was about 10 years old, and I was in a synagogue one day, and it just kind of, it didn't like just hit me, but I just got a very strong, almost spiritual, if you will, feeling of this is wrong, this is garbage, this is obvious. And it's obvious in the ways that this is superstition, and this is, you know, and I didn't have it formulated at the age of 10, but I just had that feeling. And then I went through a little phase where I felt very guilty about it, because that's one of the things that Judaism does very well, is it will guilt you into staying in the fold, you know. They're very good at, you know, making you feel very terrible about turning your back on the faith. And I went through this phase where I went to a stricter synagogue for about half a year. And
why'd you do that?
Because I felt guilty about it. I really tried hard to find some faith. And I was thinking about being a rabbi, you know, and then, you know, I got bar mitzvahed. And then I woke up from that and said, this is just not true to what I really believe. And I'm not being true to myself. And I think this is nonsense. And I think all religion is, you know, based on historical fallacy, and I understand why it exists, and especially when you look at the history of Catholicism, that's a particularly gross and terrible, you know, mean-spirited.
Oh, this would be a good time to give our email address. But let me ask you this: do you ever consider that that religion might be, you know, a beautiful metaphor to guide you through life and to help you find a place for yourself in the world?
Sure, but I will counter that, and I will agree with you. But I'll counter that by saying, I have not needed it. I do not need a Bible or a Torah or anything of that nature to tell me what is right and what is wrong.
So you grew up Jewish before becoming an atheist in Georgia. You grew up in a suburb of Atlanta. Were there a lot of like stereotypes or misconceptions about Judaism that you were exposed to?
Oh, sure. Maybe not stereotypes that I saw in particular, because we were poor too, which was also strange for people to grasp their, you know, heads around, that the idea that, wait, I thought you people hoarded money, but we were on welfare and we were living in this dumpy apartment and you know, on Medicare, and my dad had left, so, you know, here's some Jews that aren't hoarding, not controlling the media and hoarding money, and I don't know what to think, but they still found it in their heart to spit on us and beat us up on occasion, so that was all right. Which happened a number of times. I got confronted with anti-Semitism quite a bit.
Were you considered a nerd in high school?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. I mean, you know, I had kind of that Jufro glasses at an early age. I read, you know, things like that.
What did you read?
You know, books, novels. I remember getting in trouble for Mrs. Allen, my English teacher in seventh grade. I was finishing. I didn't go out to the field for PE, and I sat in the class, which you're not supposed to do. I could have gone out there. I don't know what made me sit in the class. I think I was at the very end of Gone with the Wind, and I was reading it, and I just wanted to finish it before I went out there. And she came back in the room, and I was sitting way in the back, and just sitting there reading with my head in a book. And she accused me of being up to something, and then the way she substantiated that was by saying, there's no way I would be reading Gone with the Wind. And that's a true story.
I think you got started doing comedy in Boston after dropping out of Emerson College. Why did you drop out, and what were your early routines like after you did?
Well, I actually started in Atlanta. I started just before high school ended, and did the open mic nights there for a little while, and I took a year off before I went to college, and I had just started to get like $50 here and there to MC a show and host a show, and then I went up to Emerson in Boston and kind of stopped for a while, but I did a sketch group in college, and then dropped out of Emerson pretty quickly, and I just started doing stand-up and continuing to perform in these little underground comedy groups here and there. And I've evolved quite a bit, not necessarily for the better, but my act has evolved from more of a kind of dry, more esoteric type of humor. And a lot of stuff where I would go up as a fake character, like I'd go up as a really nervous, very effeminate, gay, shaky guy who was trying comedy for his first time, and then I'd twist it at the end, or I'd go up as a retarded person, or just do these different characters where it would work, and I'd make the audience uncomfortable because they didn't know who I was, and they didn't know what to expect, and I'd always push that as far as I could. And then I started getting more personal pretty quickly, telling personal stories, and you know, would go up there with my notepad and talk about stuff that just happened to me, and it kind of evolved into where I am now. And I can't, unfortunately, I can't do fake characters. I can't go up on stage as,
because we'll recognize you.
Yeah, especially if you're there to see me, you know.
Well, obviously, right, right.
Doesn't matter if I slap a wig on, it's people still know it's me, and so you lose that quality.
I'd love to hear more about the characters who you would do without people realizing that you were in character and not being yourself.
Well, as I said, one of them that I used to love was I'd go up as a guy named Daniel James Napoleon, and it was my first time, and I would do this thing, this joke about my two dogs. It was really, you know, and I'd dress the part, and I'd be a little, like, a little nervous. This is my first time, and anywho, I have two adorable Pekingese and Sprinkles and Pepper, and then I would just tell this very unfunny joke about them watching TV, and they saw a commercial with a dog on it. They thought the dog was real, and then nobody would laugh, and then I'd just kind of fumble around. I'd do something where they could, or I'd get them to laugh, and then I'd say, I don't know if you're laughing with me or laughing at me, and then I'd say that they're all laughing at me, and then I would go, you know, tell them that they're cruel, they're mean, and people really bum out. And I go, what do you want, some macho thing? Is that it? This is in the era of Andrew Dice Clay, by the way. I should have prefaced that. Is that it? Do you want macho? Is that strong men talking about men jokes? Is that it? And then I turn around, and then I can't say it on the air, but, you know, do some really, really crude Andrew Dice Clay thing. It was really nasty, like over the top, not funny, mean, nasty, sexist, awful humor. And then they'd laugh. And then, I'd go up occasionally as a retarded guy, you know, a special guy, and have the host walk me up, and I would just barely be able to get anything out and really make people uncomfortable, and then I'd freak out at the end, and, you know, those are two of my favorites.
It almost sounds like an Andy Kaufman type of thing.
It was. Like really ripped off a lot of his ideas at that point and at that stage in my career, and really was enamored and in awe of him and what he did and how he expanded the definition of what stand-up comedy is and could be. And yeah, I used to go up as a really angry Southerner guy too, who talk about really upset with the comics that came prior to me. You know, the language, the making fun of the Bible, and then just start slowly getting more and more kind of crazy in that Art Bell conspiracy way, and that was a fun one to do.
Where's the joy in totally confusing the audience and getting them to think that that you're a terribly unfunny comic?
Well, I mean, it's all right there. You're absolutely completely in control of them, and they don't even know it. It's a really powerful, fun thing to do. I mean, they don't know that I'm faking it, but I do, and they're all like, I'm completely controlling the entire time I'm on stage, this set, whether I do well, whether I'm perceived as doing well or poorly, and then I'm also, part of the joy is that I'm doing something that clearly is not like any of the acts you've seen so far, you know. And I would especially love that when I'd go out to LA and do these showcases where you just get the worst comics cultivating their best/worst 5 minutes, and it's just garbage, and they're just pandering, and they're trying to get a sitcom, and, you know, and then I'd go up there and I'd pretend that I had throat cancer, you know, and I'm trying to do these impressions that I was an impressionist, and I do impressions, but I have throat cancer, so I have one of those, you know,
those things,
you know, those things that make you talk like that, and you know, you just get to watch the audience go, oh my God, what is this guy? Why'd they put him on? I was so enjoying the gentleman who, you know, made fun of Tarzan, you know, and then you kind of flip it on him. But again, it doesn't translate to work.
Right.
I've always been a comedian, a comics comic, but I didn't really get a lot of work out of it.
David Cross, his new live comedy CD, whose full title I can't say on the radio, is called Shut Up, You Expletive Baby. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross.